Shoes. Recorded live.
You are listening to the Geocaching Podcast, a podcast about everything geocaching, where you'll hear tips and tricks, interviews with cachers, and lots more. Welcome to episode 36 of the Geocaching Podcast. This week we're going to be talking about GeoSense, but first thing on our list, I want to remind everybody here that we are live. 724-444-7444 is a phone number you can call if you want to be on our show, and just use TalkCast ID 7525. Now, you can also listen live from our website and do all sorts of fun stuff like that, and live is fun because we get to chat around in our chat room. So if you want to join us, make sure to go to TalkShoe.com and ID 7525. First off, though, I want to welcome and introduce Monty Ryder. Most of you have heard him if you've been listening to the show for any amount of time. He's on our show regularly. The reason I'm introducing him is because Daryl actually has to step out of the co-host seat for a few weeks for repairs to his mixing board. So we're actually going to have Montu in the co-host seat. So welcome co-host Montu Ryder.
Thank you for having me.
So, Daryl, what's been going on with you?
Oh, my entire weekend was spent doing eBay work, setting up photos, listings, a whole deal, which was a pain in the butt. However, it did give me a good chance to test those low-discharge NIM batteries I had been talking about a couple of weeks back.
And yeah, how'd they go?
I have to say, I love these things. I want to buy about another 60 of them, so they have a complete set for all my strobes and enough for the GPSRs and everything. I'm just loving these things. They're a lot more powerful than the alkaline batteries are. So if you have a device that can use them, it's great. You know, these strobes, I went for almost a full day where if I were doing that with alkaline batteries, I'd have gone 3 or 4 sets of batteries. So they last longer. They're rechargeable, which means they're cheaper. I like that. Now, I understand you did some caching this weekend. How'd that go?
Well, it's funny you mention about that. Me and Micah, my son, went out on Saturday. We just kind of were taking some time off. I had been raking the leaves, and he had been playing in them. So we took some time off and went caching. The first cache we hit, we had to DNF it because it was at like a railroad museum type of thing, and the caboose that the cache was supposed to be under was no longer there. And so we couldn't find the cache, obviously, because all that was there were the railroad tracks. And I thought, well, maybe I could look around and try and find the cache container somewhere close. Nope, no dice. There's nothing there as far as a geocache. So we had to DNF that one.
So the caboose just rolled off with the cache still attached, apparently.
It must have. I thought that the land manager would have known that the cache was there, but apparently they either didn't or forgot about it or something because they took the caboose and took the cache with it. So wherever it's at is where this cache is at right now.
Yeah, and unfortunately, but with a lot of those little railroad museums, they have the tendency to change the volunteer management of the places. So it's entirely possible whoever had taken over just didn't know.
That's true. Well, and I'm not real sure because I'm not real familiar with the museum. There was a place back farther that you had to pay to get into, and I saw a caboose back there. So I'm not real sure if that was the same caboose or not because I'm not familiar with the museum. But if it is, then it's still there. But I couldn't get to it. So then from there we moved on to a cache that me and my wife had tried some time ago. I think it was last summer, and we couldn't find it. It was in the middle of like this woods, and it was a micro in the woods, which I don't like. But I figured maybe I could see better. It'd be easier to do now that the leaves are gone off of the, you know, because I knew it was in the air. I knew it was not on the ground. And so we went ahead and tried to go find that one, and I had to DNF that one too, and I know it was there because someone had just found it. So where did my GeoSense go? So I have no idea. But then Sunday, me and we went out and found one of Mr. Incredible's caches, and we actually found that one, so I knew I had my GeoSense back. So, GeoSense, though. What is GeoSense, Daryl? Maybe some of our listeners don't know. What is GeoSense?
Yeah, well, we actually talked about that on the first episode of the Caches of the Roundtable with Sunny, Sandy, Dree, and myself. And we really had a kind of a hard time coming up with a good definition of it. But basically, since then, I've kind of thought about it. And to me, GeoSense is the ability to just walk up to find a cache hiding spot without needing the GPSR.
Yeah, I would definitely say the same thing. I think that, for me, GeoSense is kind of that ability to know that, like, where it would be hidden. Like, you have the general idea. You know it's just off the path. You could, you know, look at the Google Maps, see kind of where it's at. Look up and kind of know that, hey, it might be that unusual pile of rocks there. It might be, something else. But you kind of get that ability. It's something that I think is built by having more caches, more finds. The more experience you have finding a cache will help you build some GeoSense because you get a chance to see the variety of placements and camo techniques. But I think it also may depend on the cacher that places it. What do you think?
Yeah, well, and you'll definitely get a feel for how certain cachers place their caches, and that will always help. And that's one of those things, too, with getting out there and finding more caches. The more different hides that you experience, the better your chances are of finding an unusual hide from a cacher that you've never met. If you're only exposed to the one cache hider, then you're not going to be finding someone else's hides as easily because you've only had the experience with that one style of hide.
Yeah, but I would definitely say that there's times, though, that even if you only have experience with a few cachers, there are certain hiding techniques that are universal, I think, that you may be, for me, I'm in the northern Indiana area, and, you know, I've got an experience of certain cachers. But if I go to, you know, your area, I was up there last year in the summer, and I found a lot of the ones fairly easy, too, because I think it was universal as far as some of the stuff goes. What do you think about that?
Yeah, there's some definite universal hides, and one of the things, obviously, is like an LPC. There's not too much that you can do with an LPC, so everyone pretty much hides it the same way. But one of the things that we do find a little bit unusual is, you know, even going from one side of Michigan to the other side, we find that the hides, even the simple micros, are just a little bit different and might be a little trickier for us to find on the west side of the state than on the east side because we come from the east side.
Now, you mentioned LPCs. Just out of curiosity, have you found any other tricky ways to hide an LPC? I know that I've seen a couple different ways. Do you know of more ways than just skirt lifting?
Yeah, there's definitely more than just the skirt lifting. My favorite one, which you don't see all that often, is an electrical plate that's just magnetically attached to the side of the pole. So you don't necessarily know that that's not supposed to be there unless you're a geocacher and you take a look at it and notice, this doesn't look like it's actually attached to anything.
Okay. Now, would you say, would you say that it's caches have, if you have GeoSense, that sometimes can be bad?
Yeah, well, and one of the things that we kind of got into is once you've started to build your GeoSense and rely on it, you tend to start relying on it so much that you forget some of the obvious places to hide a cache, or some of the even less obvious. So, you know, we'll go toward a cache and just kind of overthink it. You know, it's like a nice, simple, you know, micro in a tree kind of thing. So here we are searching everywhere but in the trunk of the tree. We're searching in the branches, for instance, because that's where, this last one was that we found. You know, we're searching, good examples. We might be looking for a pine cone hanging in a tree, but it's just a film canister stuck in a knot hole. You know, your GeoSense kind of goes awry at that point because you're not really looking for that. You know, a lot of the GeoSense is actually just, you know, trying to get a good set of assumptions going that you can work from, which, you know, can also backfire on you.
Now, I find, too, that if I have got, let's say, like, for instance, this cache that we did this weekend, this the Mr. Incredible one, here's how we did it. We pulled up to the parking lot. It actually just off the parking lot. And because both of our boys were in the car, Eli was awake, Micah was asleep. It was kind of cold out. So what I did was I stayed in the car while Julie went out and took a look at it, tried to find it. She couldn't find it. I went out, looked for it. I found it. I find that it helps to have two different sets of eyes who are not necessarily even looking at the same time. Because if you're there at the same time, you know, you're going to kind of see what I'm doing, and you're going to kind of get that same, like, oh, let's look for a pine cone in the tree type of a thing. Whereas when Julie and I looked separately, you know, it was easy for us to find it because one looked in while the other one wasn't even there. And so, you know, I wasn't seeing I kind of see what she was doing, but not, you know, right up close. So I couldn't see, you know, exactly what she was doing as far as where to look. So I find that doing that, it would help a lot, too.
Yeah, definitely. I'm sorry?
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, that definitely is one of the things, too, is, you know, if you go out with other groups of cachers, it's great. It gives you a lot of perspective on where other hives might be, because everyone has a little bit different experiences and a little bit different perception of the hides and the finds and everything. But if you're relying on those people to find the caches for you, it doesn't really help you to build the geosense.
No. Now, I would say another thing, too, to build your geosense is definitely don't rely so much on the use of your GPSR. For one thing, we know already that our GPSR has an error, you know, an error rate on it, and so does the person that hides it. So you could be off, you know, a fairly good distance. And so if you try to go right to your, you know, ground zero and, you know, keep saying, oh, it should be here because that's where my GPS says, you're not going to necessarily find it. The best way to do is just kind of put it down when you get in within, you know, 50, 100 feet of where it says ground zero is, and just kind of look around and think, where would I put this? You know, if I'm in the middle of a pine tree, if I was this cache placer, you know, where would I put this? And this is where it comes, you know, comes in where if you've placed caches before, it comes in really handy because you kind of get that idea of, you know, where I would place a cache if I was the cache placer. But so I would say don't rely so much on your GPS. Put it down. Kind of, you know, use your common sense of in your geosense. I can't really use that word to define it, but, you know, put your GPS down and just use what you know as far as geocaching. Another thing is use Google Maps or Google Earth, because if you use those two things and use a printout of it and try to get there without your GPS, you're definitely going to be relying more on the clues around you as opposed to what your GPS says.
Yeah, so I've done that. I was going to say I did the Google Maps thing a lot, looking for FTFs while I was at work and skating out for a quick first-to-find attempt, and it is amazing at how easy it is to find caches in most of the parks. You know, it's just, you take a look at the Google map, which, you know, grab the satellite view, and you see placement of trees, benches, signs. You know, you can see the shadows from the signs on the ground. So just that kind of stuff really gives you a good idea of landmarks in the park, and then you just go walk over to that area. Okay, here's this area that's, you know, roughly 20 feet wide, and it's going to be somewhere in here. And you just sit there, where would I put a cache if I were hiding it? And usually it isn't too tough to walk up and find it. Now, the other thing is, especially with the first defines, you don't know that those cords are going to be quite right either. You know, we've had some really bad ones around here lately where they're miles off. So nothing's going to help if it's that bad. But, you know, if you can grab that sheet, take a look at it, and use your geosense more than the coordinates, you're really going to have a better time trying to find those FTFs.
Now, when you do that, do you print out the actual Google Earth or Google Maps sheet and take it with you, or do you just solely rely on your memory?
Most of the time I do print the Google map, you know, the satellite view, but I don't print it in color. I just do black and white. You know, I'm just looking for...
Do you find that it's easier with black and white?
I do, because you don't clutter it up as much. You know, it takes out some of that extra information.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you have any other ideas on how to build GeoSense?
Well, you know, we've already talked about doing a variety of caches. And part of that is make sure that you're not doing all easy 1-1s or all hard 5-5s. You know, you want a variety, everything from like a 1-1 to a 1-5 or a 5-1, so that you have just about the whole gamut covered. And, you know, you just want to start with 1-1s because you don't want to get too frustrated. But some of the 2s even start to get a little bit more challenging and can really help you get a better idea of hides.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also a good thing when you're hiding a cache too. Is, you know, I really try to discourage people from hiding caches until they've done a number of hides and really do start to build that GeoSense, because that will tell you if you have a location that maybe isn't going to work as well. You know, if you're just out hiding, you're going to say, oh, I'm going to go hide a cache. I'm going to put it at the base of this tree because I've seen, you know, some other caches there and pile some sticks on it. Well, once you've gotten that GeoSense built up, you might recognize that, well, this tree doesn't provide any cover and it's going to look really odd and really obvious. So the chances the kids are going to find it are pretty good. And that's, you know, that's just one of those experience kind of things. You have to learn to build your GeoSense to help find those caches, or you have better spots for those caches.
One other thing I just thought of while you were speaking about that, with the GeoSense being bad, is I would say definitely because if you're an experienced cache placer and you're going to play on the fact that you know people have GeoSense, and so people are going to be looking for, you know, the film can or whatever, or even the ammo can at the base of the tree with some sticks, you know, I'm going to hide it somewhere else that you're not going to be thinking about. And so it makes it harder for you because you're oversimplifying the problem.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and there's so many of those where, you know, if you step back and take a look at it from a non-geocacher point of view, where would I hide something, it might be a little bit more obvious.
Mm-hmm. Now, you'd mentioned this earlier, but I'm going to mention it again. The Cachers of the Roundtable, Episode 1, where you guys talked about it. If you haven't heard that yet, it's at cachersroundtable.com, and you can it's basically a roundtable discussion with the other geocaching podcasters out there. So I would definitely go ahead and hit that one up, Episode 1. It's with Sunny, Sandy, Dree, and Daryl, and they talk about GeoSense and mention a lot of the same stuff we've mentioned here and some other stuff. But go ahead and check that out. Another thing I want to remind people too is we still have our contest going on, and that contest is this again. I'm going to remind you, if you need to call in a tip to our voicemail line at 206-350-3GPS, and just leave a tip, something you use while geocaching, or a tip that you use with geocaching, or, you know, just something that you use for geocaching, a tip, and you'll be put into our contest, and the drawing is for the Mego Fall coin, so we will be drawing that soon. You have until, I think, the Tuesday before, I'm sorry, I totally forget this right now. You have until the 30th, and then on our next show is when we'll actually draw the coin. So, with that, thank you guys for joining us tonight. I'm going to open the phone lines up, and if anyone has any questions as far as, or any comments, questions, or anything about GeoSense, go ahead and just say them right now. Or if you have any other general geocaching questions, go ahead and ask us, and we'll try to do that. So does anyone have any questions or comments?
This is GeoAddict. One of the things I think, I don't know if it was mentioned on the Cachers of the Round Table or not, but one of the tips that I've found is that I'm trying to get away from is not to look at the hints as readily anymore. So trying to build that up again, you know, I try to go out by myself. It forces me to find the cache on my own rather than in a group. So those are two things that I've been working on to develop my GeoSense.
Yeah, that's an excellent point.
I was gonna say, I think you had a cache that you guys had trouble finding because you decrypted the hint, didn't you?
Yeah, we had one of the Cache-O-Maniacs caches hidden by Mr. Incredible. Actually, I think it is just Mr. Incredible is a Cache-O-Maniac. We read the hint too early, and, well, we completely botched it because we could not find that cache based on the hint. And we talked to Mr. Incredible at the Geobash, and had we not decrypted that hint, we would have been in much better shape. He gave us a little bit more description, and we just assumed from the hint that we were looking for the wrong thing.
I don't feel as bad sometimes when I'm with some cashers who have like over 1,000 finds, and they're having the same hard time that I am finding the cash.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and you'll find some of these people are not as experienced. Will actually find the caches much quicker because they're not relying on their experience as much.
Monty Ryder brought up a good point in our chat here. Monty, go ahead and say that out loud.
Yeah, some of the caches around here, the hints are actually meant to throw you off. We've had a couple of caches where when you read the hint, it makes you think that you're looking for one thing, and then when you finally find it, you realize you've really been looking for something totally different. One cache in point, not going to give too much detail, but it made it sound like I was looking for a decon container, and it was something totally different and much smaller. Not quite down to the film cam, but close to it. So that does happen from time to time. So, you know, that's another thing. Take those hints with a grain of salt when you do use them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, sometimes the best hints are actually in the title.
As I'm finding out with this cache, puzzle cache that I'm trying to decipher, and I just can't get it, but everyone that I'm asking hints from says, look at the title, and I just can't get it.
The ones that are most frustrating for me are the ones that where I've looked in the place where it's hidden, and then I find, you know, I had one here recently that it was down a pipe, and I didn't have a flashlight or anything, but, you know, I'd look there, and later on I found out that that's where it was.
Yeah, was that one in the Downriver area?
No, it's actually out in the Chelsea region here.
Oh, okay. Not, yeah, because we had one like that down river when we tried to do, and if it hadn't been for the camera phone, we would have given up on it.
Yeah, I had actually run into one a couple weekends ago after the flash mob, in fact, and it was... It was actually that the hint was that it was supposed to be airborne or up in the air or something like that. And we believe a number of us were looking for it, and we believe that the thing that was holding it up was broken. And so it was whoever found it hit it more on the ground and stuff. And so it was... the hint not only threw us off, but, you know, also I didn't dig hard enough through some of the leaves to find it. So part of it was, you know, I was looking in that area and, you know, figuring, well, I've already looked there. I didn't look again and completely missed it again.
Yeah.
Now, guys, I want to say this, too. If anyone listening to the podcast that's recorded has any other tips as far as building your GeoSense or any other comments on your GeoSense, go ahead and call us at 206-350-3GPS number and leave us a message, and you'll also be entered into the contest because that'll be a tip and trick about building GeoSend. So with that, I want to thank everyone for being here on episode 36 of the Geocaching Podcast talking about GeoSend. Join us next week where we will have Montu Ryder as our guest co-host, and I want to just 9 o'clock, same time, same place, 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's our show notes are at geocachingpodcast.info. You can find all of our show notes and our links and all other information there. So go ahead and do that, and go get them this week, and have a good week geocaching.